One of the notable aspects of Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign was its grassroots organizing and extensive new use of media like YouTube. Arun Chaudhry worked with that campaign and then in President Obama's White House as its official videographer, filming everything from public appearances to public meetings to backstage downtime. Mr. Chaudhry left in 2011. He has just written a book about his experiences called First Cameraman, documenting the Obama presidency in real time. It's published by Times Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you were part of the new media team for Barack Obama's campaign. Did you have an official role?
Yes. A friend of mine, Kate Albright-Hanna, had joined as the video director for the campaign from CNN, which is a much more traditional route, you know, from journalism into politics rather than me. I was a fiction filmmaker. But she brought me on to sort of up the ante in the amount of filmmaking skill that folks had on the campaign. And then I quickly became the sort of main road guy. And so my title was New Media Road Director.
Was this the first new media team for a presidential campaign using Facebook, YouTube? I'm not sure that Twitter existed at the time.
You know, a lot of the things that Obama for America was doing in 2008 were built on what the Howard Dean campaign did in 2004. But these things that you mentioned, you know, Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, they didn't really exist in 2004. So a lot of what folks who worked for Howard Dean were imagining they wanted to do just simply didn't have the infrastructure to exist. And so in 2008, you had the convergence of the infrastructure with the desire.
And it's only something that Democrats did?
In the beginning, it certainly seemed like it was only something Democrats were doing. You know, I talk in the book about how in 2010, after they took this big loss, the Republicans really decided to come back in an almost militaristic fashion online. You know, who can have the most tweets? How can we send out the most Facebook information, just sort of bigger, better, faster, more? But I think the creative use of it really has been pioneered by the left.
Well, how was Obama's YouTube and social media strategy formed? People sit around and say, we want to do this rather than that. I mean, nowadays, as I understand it, Chris Christie, the Republican governor of New Jersey, has somebody who follows him to everything, and they're posting YouTube little YouTube things constantly.
I'm a big fan of Governor Christie's YouTube channel. You know, I may not share politics to him, but I think he shares a similar quality to Barack Obama in that he behaves as his authentic self on camera. Mm-hmm. You know, and Barack Obama may not be an in-your-face New Jersey, you know, kind of guy, but it is the same thing.
You're saying that he is pretty much the same thing on camera and off camera? The president?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think anyone who's covered the White House closely can tell you that. And I hope anyone who's seen West Wing Week can tell you that.
Is that because, as some critics have suggested, he's very much in control all the time?
He is a very calm person who I think just doesn't feel the need to perform. Which I think, you know, one of the first anecdotes I tell in the book is I'm asking him, would he look out the window so I can take a shot of him doing the thoughtful looking out the window look. We all know this look. It's in every political movie ever made. I'm looking out the bus at America and I'm thinking about it. And he actually asked me if I wouldn't mind holding off and taking the shot until he actually did look. You know, he was like, we had a long ride ahead of us. Just wait till I do it. And I think that kind of commitment to not wanting to perform has done him a world of good. I think the opposite would be someone like maybe John Kerry in 2004, someone who's pretending to act a certain way that they think people want their president to act.
Well, it's great when Ronald Reagan does that because he already understands how to affect the look. But politicians often are not very good actors.
That's right. That's right. I think politicians, their authentic self shines through. Having a trained actor in the White House was, I think, certainly the anomaly.
What kinds of videos were most effective for the campaign?
Well, see, this is what was interesting, because someone like me coming from fiction film background, you know, I would immediately be like, these sharp, smart, provocative, funny internet videos would definitely be the things that people will be the most into. And I really set up trying to make those. But more and more, we noticed that the bigger hits were Obama himself, and the more unscripted he was, like an entire speech or an entire town hall or an entire visit to a diner, the more we could put these things up just as they were, the more people responded to them, which was counterintuitive.
Now, you said that you came to this job from working on fiction films. Mm-hmm. There are people who might suggest that all political films are fiction. Were you using pretty much the same techniques? Because this would have been more natural for a documentarian, wouldn't it?
The way I describe this is that in New York, as an independent filmmaker in the 2000s in New York, I could not afford to making the distinctions between a commercial, a non-for-profit, a amazing independent feature film, or some documentary on some amazing subject. Really, they were all just films, and the same process goes to all of it. So I guess I would answer the question of, is fiction an appropriate discipline to enter this kind of thing? As I think it's the most, I think that documentary and fiction have an equal commitment to the truth.
And I'm assuming that the fact that digital cameras have been available over the last how many years, that it makes it a lot easier. You probably would have had a much harder time doing this sort of thing if you'd had to carry a large 16 or 35 millimeter camera on your shoulder.
Oh, that's right. And not just having that camera on my shoulder, but also then having my sound man and possibly a lighting person to, you know, to round out the scene. So all of a sudden, instead of one person's small camera, you have three people. So I think you have a great moment in 2008 where the cameras are small enough, the desire is there, and technology meets personality, meets someone who does happen to be a good subject for this type of approach.
And you wound up being the first official White House videographer?
That's right.
Nobody had – we'd had taping in the White House before, but both Johnson and, of course, Nixon. But this is the first time anybody thought, well, we should just keep a guy around with a camera all the time?
There is a group of people from the military and the White House Communications Agency who've traditionally provided film and then video support to the president. But there was never a personal videographer in the same way that there was a personal photographer, somebody who hangs out when it's not necessarily out in front making a speech. So there's always this institutional support for video, but it's just what the subject matter was different.
So do you think you've established a precedent? Do you think that every future president will have a White House videographer?
I certainly think that the public has shown that there's a strong appetite to see this, and there is now another White House videographer that I've left. But my caveat on that is that she is someone who the president does know. So I think the real tests of the strength of this are, will there be a videographer who a president doesn't know?
And that was you when you first met the president.
Yeah, but did he
trust you from the start?
You know, he was very trusting of everyone on his staff to do the job that they were there to do. And, you know, it's a funny story that the person who was on the campaign before me filming actually told me that – didn't make it into the book, actually. But he, very early on in the announcement tour, was filming Obama, and the campaign manager in Iowa was like, what is this guy doing back here? And Senator Obama said, well, he's with the campaign, to which the campaign manager in Iowa described, which campaign, you know, with his finger in the air. So I would say that the senator – was definitely faster to acclimate than his staff.
Although I imagine you also witnessed to some things that you probably didn't want to put on YouTube.
That's definitely the case, but I think much less often than people would think. I think the real reason you turn the camera off, and certainly the reasons at the White House that I was asked to both times I did, which was, I think people think, astonishingly few times, were not because of something we didn't want the president to be on record as having said, but we wanted the people he was saying it to feel free to react to him. And I think that was one of the most important considerations for me at the White House.
My guest is Arun Chaudhry. His book, First Cameraman, Documenting the Obama Presidency in Real Time. It's published by Times Books. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Arun Chaudhry, his book, First Cameraman, Documenting the Obama Presidency in Real Time. Obviously, that title is a play on all of those firsts, like First Lady, etc.
Yes.
But you're not the first cameraman, but you're the first videographer ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You write about working well on the road during the campaign. What were some of the difficulties you faced?
Well, you know, I think it's difficulty we all face, bandwidth. Just trying to be places wherever you are, whether it's a plane or, you know, a helicopter or a van, and maybe that's when I finish my movie and I need it to be up as fast as it can because it's just me out there. And so just looking at the number of hours it would take to upload a certain amount of footage was my main.
Well, what kinds of things were you making on the road? Were you doing things for ads, or were you looking for kind of candid behind-the-scenes videos?
Well, on the campaign, you know, you're always looking just to be giving footage out to whoever needs it, whether it be people trying to make an ad or, you know, just letting people know it's out there, sending it back home. But when it came to the White House, most of my energies were concentrating on a thing I was making for history, which was to record every week of the history called West Wing Week. Every single week, every Thursday we put one of these things out. And this was a challenge because I was making it by myself. And if deadline day happened to be, which was Thursdays, happened to be while we were on a flight to Prague, then I was going to darn well finish it on the flight to Prague. And the White House is – everything is set up so you can work 24/7. So there's no excuse not to. There's always some way to upload it.
And then – so you could upload it on Air Force One?
Yep. Many times uploaded things from Air Force One.
Were you influenced by any filmmakers or were you just doing this developing your own style?
You know, I ended up developing my own style because when I did try to emulate some of these – some other filmmakers, it kind of felt a little flat to me. You know, when I thought about great government work done with real directors, you think of Frank Capra and John Ford and this amazing stuff that they did in the 40s and in the 30s. And so I made a movie kind of in that vein about the national parks and used a lot of old newsreel footage and kind of had that feel. And it was just sort of felt like a retro silly thing to have done. And so kind of in the end, I really needed to find my own voice.
Well, I was thinking more of people like Frederick Wiseman who
– Oh, in terms of documentary film.
Apply the fly on the wall approach. Is it possible to be unobtrusive and unnoticed while you're filming?
Well, you know, when I was sort of researching my job at the White House, I looked up a lot of who these folks were, who you're talking about. And Robert Giroux is a name that comes up over and over again, who worked as a journalist, but really was a pioneering Verite documentarian. And he made a fantastic film called Primary, which is some of the first kind of backstagey footage we do have of presidential candidates. And then a really amazing movie called Crisis. And the crews of these movies are a who's who of the elite, best of the best American documentarians. It's, you know, Maisels. It's Pennebaker. This is the real deal. And so seeing some of their techniques and actually even getting to speak with them about some of these things they were witness to meant a lot to me and informed me a lot. I remember Al Maisels talking about making Primary, and he was like, when you're not a press guy, when you're working with a politician, they look at you differently. You can tell in their eyes that they know you're up to something different, even if you're not necessarily on their side. They just know you're a filmmaker and you're not a journalist. And I do feel like I understand that. You do get that look from people.
Well, everything nowadays is gotcha, so – but there are different kinds of gotchas, aren't there?
That's right.
Were people worried about you and gotcha moments?
I think one of the reasons that, if we can call it this project, this process was allowed to keep unfolding was that no one who knew Barack Obama well thought that there would be any kind of macaca moment for him.
Well, there was this an interesting video, his Obama's reaction to Hillary Clinton's 3 a.m. ad. Can you explain what happened there?
I think it's a really good example of how new media and old media can work in harmony together. And so if you'll remember, the 3 a.m. ad that Hillary Clinton had was a very effective, you know, well-publicized ad during the Pennsylvania primaries that said, when the phone rings in the White House, who do you want to answer it? And the Obama campaign responded quickly but in two distinctive ways that I think illustrate the kind of power of the media. First off, the traditional media team made what was almost the exact same ad over again. Simply the phone ringing, and this time Obama answers, and you're pleased with that result. And then my team, specifically actually just me, broke off from the campaign to investigate this amazing thing that had happened, which was it turned out that the actress who was playing the young girl in the Hillary Clinton ad had grown up and was an avid Obama supporter and had actually participated as a precinct captain for him during the Washington State caucuses. And she mentioned on a TV, you know, I'd like to make my own ad sometime. And, well, that was certainly all the invitation that we needed to call her up. And it actually took longer to convince her dad that we really were from the campaign than it did to film her.
That was Casey Knowles?
Casey Knowles, about her involvement in the
– So she called you and gave – you can't always count on that sort of thing happening.
No, you know.
Why do you bring up turkey sandwiches so often in this book?
It's funny, you know, thinking about politics and what you remember, what you take away. Really what I remember is eating turkey sandwiches and – a million forms with a million kinds of ranch dressing smeared on them. You know, all the cliches are true. It really is just this world of, you know, sandwiches and donuts and other things that are carb laden. And after a while, it becomes almost surreal.
Do you think it was a good strategy for you not to look like the other people? I mean, I'm assuming everybody was walking around in a suit and tie, and there you were in sneakers and casual clothing.
You know, I wore a suit when I was at the White House, except that I always did keep the sneakers on. And this was due to a few accidents I had sliding down slippery things at the White House. You know, they got these real slick kind of government steps and things. But in general, I thought it was important for me not to look like the press. As long as people could identify me as being different than the press, I didn't too much worry about being identified or not identified any other way.
On the campaign trail and also in the White House, you were filming almost constantly. Obviously, it's impossible to use all that footage. What happened to all the footage that didn't make it into an ad or some YouTube video?
Well, on the campaign, all that footage is still owned by the new campaign now, and they have these massive servers with this stuff on it, and I think we need to figure out better ways to back it up, lest this be lost. But interestingly, the government side, everything you shoot is considered to be part of the Presidential Records Act. And so every scrap, every frame is preserved for posterity.
You use the term stand behind. You say that Vice President Joe Biden is a good stand behind. What do you mean?
You know, I think one of the hardest skills for a politician is the stand behind. Another perhaps more prominent or more involved politician is speaking to a crowd, and then it's your job because it's your area of expertise or you're just there as support and backup just to stand behind them while they speak. And to look engaged while not actually doing anything for sometimes upwards of 20, 25 minutes, this is a real skill.
So you cut to the stand behind showing how interested this person is in what's being said.
Yeah, or they just sort of add to the general, you know, general feel of an event. Maybe it's a Homeland Security event, and it's like, well, I can see the Secretary Napolitano there, even though Obama's the one making the statement. But no, not everyone does it. Some folks start to squirm, you know. Some folks start to look a little uncomfortable.
When I took pictures seriously, there were always those moments when I regretted missing something. Were there a lot of things that you wish you had caught?
This is why I think it's good that I'm not that I'm have a fiction film fiction film background rather than documentary background. I think that feeling of regret and shame when you miss something you have in the documentary world is inappropriate to what I did, because there's always going to be something amazing happening while you're lamenting what you've missed. You don't know what you're missing. And since you don't know the story you're telling, history hasn't finished the book yet, you don't know that what you missed was important and what you're coming up next isn't as important. And so I think being patient and methodical really served me well.
Now, this book is being published during the campaign season. Do you see it as a campaign book, a pro-Obama book?
I think the book is unreservedly pro-Obama, not only because that's my politics, but because I think the qualities that I'm trying to illustrate through my work are directly embodied by the president and in many ways are the antithesis of Governor Romney's candidacy. And I think that's just a coincidence. He doesn't have to be running against someone who does come across as inauthentic as Mitt Romney. But in terms of this book, it's very helpful to set up a dichotomy between the two.
Do you think Mitt Romney has his own personal videographer as well?
I don't think he does. I know that they have a very fast turnaround time when they make their ads. But in terms of just a constant presence connecting people on the trail, the things that they've done, and in some ways it's a reflective of what we did in 2008, haven't necessarily been working that well for them.
Why'd you leave the job?
I just ran out of steam. You know, I have a condition called ulcerative colitis that was really starting to catch up with me. And I had a three-year-old toddler who really wanted to see me more often.
So now you work at Revolution Messaging. What kind of company is that?
It's an online communications and strategy company that work for a lot of progressive organizations, whether it be labor unions or, you know, like the NAACP. And it's a great fit for me because they have a kind of DIY ethic, and it's run by folks who worked for Obama during 2008. And it's been a great place for me to hang my hat and get to work.
A DIY ethic, because you were the only one who were – you were shooting it and then editing it and then uploading it.
Yeah, you know, and all the while convincing people before that the finished product would be something worthy of a president.
Your blog mentions that the camera you used during the campaign is now part of the Smithsonian's photography collection.
This was a thrill. This was very exciting.
Is it no longer has it been replaced by something more contemporary?
I used it for the second half of the campaign and then the first couple months of the White House before getting a new White House camera that was compatible with all the other technologies in the, you know, in the building, and just sort of made more sense. So this was a only semi-functioning camera by the end, but it definitely served me well in many countries and many, many states.
The technology keeps on changing, and so you have to keep on upgrading the camera, I imagine.
Yeah. You know, I think probably people feel pressure to do it every year or so. I only feel pressure every couple of years.
Have you been following the things that have been put up during this campaign season?
I have. You know, I'm always very interested in seeing, you know, the different aspects of political media coming out. And I do think that there's been a general lack of engaging, authentic material this time around. And I do blame it on the post-Citizens United atmosphere.
Well, some people would also say everybody wants to play it safe. Nobody really wants to get specific. But do you think that'll change with the debates?
I think it will. I think the tone of the commercials that you saw, for instance, in the Republican primaries were such that people were increasingly talking about the debates as being their primary motivator.
Aaron Chaudhry will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y Tribeca on Monday, September 10th at noon. He'll also be speaking on Saturday, September 29th at 3 p.m. at the Museum of the Moving Image. For information on both events, go to our show page at WNYC.org. His book, First Cameraman, is published by Times Books. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks so much for having me.